Many higher education providers, educators, and students are recognising the benefits of online learning, providing choice in place, pace, and mode of learning. In this podcast, we'll be exploring a topic that institutions, academics, students, and governments have all been deliberating for the past 2 years. How can we provide high quality, accessible, and engaging learning experiences whilst leveraging the benefits of online learning? My name is Dr. Kay Hack. I'm Principal Advisor for Learning and Teaching with Advance HE. I'm delighted to be exploring this question with Emma C. Greaves from the University of Law.
Hello.
And Professor Steve Pettifer from the University of Manchester.
Hello.
Steve and Emma were team leads on the recent Flexible by Design collaborative project, which was designed to support institutions think purposefully about their teaching and learning offer, building on lessons learned from the pandemic. We were also joined today by Sarah Knight, Head of Teaching and Learning and Transformation at JISC, who supported the delivery of the Flexible by Design programme.
Hello.
Can we start by exploring what do we actually mean by flexible learning? Emma, what does it mean to you and the University of Law?
So the University of Law is predominantly a multi-campus based university. So if you imagine pre-pandemic, we were facilitating the majority of our learning in a face-to-face way across a number of campuses in cities across the UK. We did also have a developing online campus as well. And we had to switch very quickly, as obviously most universities did, to a streaming model during the recent lockdowns. From this, I think we've developed our thinking around a more flexible approach to learning. So for us, we are very much thinking about the hybrid approach to our modes of learning. So we obviously have some courses which need to remain face-to-face. So that will remain a mode of learning. We have our purely online campus and the mode of learning there, and we're exploring a more blended approach now. So an example of the more blended approach is how we've approached our undergraduate law programmes. We have moved all of our large group teaching to delivery via Collaborate. That allows still for tutor delivery, but it also allows for a lot more interactivity, and obviously the students can do that wherever they choose. They don't need to be in a large lecture theatre anymore. We can try out many tests with them. We can get them to collaborate with one another in the Collaborate room and have discussions with their peers. And that is working very well in the undergraduate programmes. That's the first year we've tried that this year. Our teaching model is, we call it our PEC model, and the PEC stands for Prepare, Engage, Consolidate. I think that's probably very, very similar to the models of teaching and learning that many HEIs use. But what we've tried to do now is to really move the prepare and consolidate parts of our teaching model into an asynchronous format. So it doesn't matter what type of mode a student is studying in terms of, so for example, if I take contract law, one of our fundamentals of our law programmes, a student might be studying that in a campus, they may be studying that online. The prepare and consolidate tasks will all be the same. They will be delivered in an asynchronous format using our virtual learning environment, which is Blackboard for the University of Law. So what we're trying to do now is look at how we can take that one stage further and make it a little bit more interesting and interactive. The other thing that we're exploring a little bit at the moment is how we deliver in the classroom, but also in effect beam students in if they choose not to attend for a particular session. So how can we bring the student who is in a remote location into the classroom? So that's completely different from our online campus. That's dealing with our students that have chosen the face-to-face mode of learning but don't want to come in for a particular day and they want to still engage in the classroom activity. That's in its infancy, but it's certainly something that we're looking to start doing.
That's brilliant, Emma. Thank you so much for that. And I think, you know, what you said there about, you know, actually the bit that the prepare and consolidate are the same whichever mode of delivery, because actually where learning happens is with the learner. So, you know, the mode is almost kind of irrelevant, isn't it? So I think that's really interesting. Thanks for that quick snapshot of what's happening in your practice, which I think reflects a lot of the conversations across the sector. So, Steve, can I turn to you? And what's the University of Manchester vision for flexible learning?
So I think there are some things in common with what Emma's just said, but other differences. So we're an enormous university. We're 45,000 students on campus pre-pandemic, something like that. And we cover an enormous variety of different subjects. So you've got sort of clinical, laboratory, ones that involve performance. And that means that it's incredibly hard to find one model that fits all of those very, very different kinds of subjects. So I think we've got a bigger challenge in that kind of respect. We started looking at what we might do to make things more flexible. Just pre-pandemic, the university published its vision kind of pretty much before the pandemic hit, like a few weeks literally before the pandemic hit. And that was to move more in the direction of flexible and blended learning. And then, of course, the pandemic hit and that accelerated everything. So for us, I think it's about giving learners more choice over the pace at which they learn, the place they learn from, and the pathways that are available to them. So for our on-campus students, now that we're getting back to being able to teach on campus, that's meant a shift towards more active learning, more flipped classrooms, more blended approaches, more use of tech and digital content to make things more accessible. And that's kind of like for the on-campus setup. But we're also exploring other pathways to learning. So that's things like stackable qualifications, modular qualifications, micro-credentials, CPD, exec ed, apprenticeships, and that kind of thing. I think the thing that's common between those is a shift towards what we're currently calling a digital first mindset. I'm not sure that's quite the right phrase for it, but it's the best one we've got so far as a sort of like a working bit of terminology. And that's thinking about how you make content and experiences that can be delivered in a variety of different ways to suit different needs so that you can repurpose things as those needs change and make them more sort of bespoke for particular student cohorts, make stuff more accessible, make it more diverse, make it more inclusive as well.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. And I think, you know, again, at the heart of that is the choice. So if you can make content, you make the learning materials accessible in all of those different ways, then the students can have that choice about how they dip into those. I think clearly flexible learning is almost synonymous now with the digital and with online learning. And that's unavoidable given the role of technology in all of the things that you guys have both mentioned already. Facilitating those sort of more engaging learning and teaching activities, of course, you know, underpinning all of our learning management systems and the technology that we all use, not just in learning, but in entertainment and for social interaction. But clearly, and I think this really picks up on the point that Steve made, that flexible learning is more than just providing online learning. And it's about providing that choice in terms of what, where and how, and indeed when students learn. As part of the flexible design programme, we heard from students from a number of institutions who explored their vision for flexible learning. And for me personally, I think that was the most sort of rewarding part, and just sort of the maturity of some of the thinking that went on in those sessions was brilliant. But Steve, what are your students saying?
So we've held a load of workshops during the pandemic, and most recently, over the past 6 months, we've done quite an intensive series of workshops with students and staff to explore how we can make flexible learning work for them. So we split it up into six themes. So there's accessibility, assessment, space on campus, training and skills, technology and innovation. And the thing that's come out most strongly, I think, in those is how important choice is for students. And that's across all kinds of different areas. That's choice over how and what to learn, how to access materials, whether you're going to attend something in person or remotely, how easy it is to flip between those, and also choice about how to be assessed. I mean, some of these are going to be really challenging to actually work through, but they're things that are coming out really loud and clear in terms of what students want. I think it's also really clear that there's not going to be a one-size-fits-all best solution for all kinds of students. So being able to have flexibility in these kinds of things means you can probably serve the needs of a larger number of students with more diverse needs. And it means that students they're sort of empowered to choose what works best for them as well. But this is going to be challenging. That's not how higher education has been set up historically. So it is going to be quite a change of mindset for us as providers. And it's not something that we're just going to be able to switch on overnight and suddenly do really well. So there's an element of working through this. A few specific things. Students care a lot about the technology that helps them collaborate. to work together on problems, communicate with each other, ask questions, get better feedback and that kind of thing. They're conscious of the need to build digital skills. They know that the future workplace is going to demand different things of them, and they're looking to build those kinds of digital skills alongside the subjects that they're studying. They want their assessments to be authentic and to be related to things that happen in the real world and not to be sort of separated as just purely academic exercises. And there's quite a lot of excitement around new technologies, things like VR. It's hard to tell exactly where that's going to fit in. There are some areas where it fits in quite nicely already. In other areas, it's early days. I think those are the kinds of things that are coming out of the discussions that have happened so far.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Steve. Everybody likes a bit of shiny new kit. Well, maybe that's just me. But I think also that idea of more authentic assessments and how can we really use technology to make those assessments more authentic. And there's lots of ideas coming in there in terms of obviously accessing to real world data, to real world scenarios, and drone footage, all sorts of things that you can use by leveraging the technology. I think that's going to be an exciting area of development. Emma, what messages did you take from listening to your students?
I think what Steve says about choice, that certainly was a message that came through loud and clear from University of Law students. Choice about modes, choice about when they study and where they study, and interestingly, choice about the use of assessment types as well. So they want more than one choice in terms of an assessment, a coursework and something else, and they can choose how to deliver that assessment to the tutor. So for us, I think it's probably referred to as the high flex model, the being able to jump in and out of classroom settings as and when. As Steve said, it's a challenge. I think that model is a real challenge, and I don't think it's anything that University of Law can move to straight away. And I can see Steve nodding his head, so I would say that's true as well. But as I say, we are looking at the tech to be able to allow a student to engage remotely into a session. In terms of tech, just picking up on the point that you just made, Kay, we deliver law programmes, but not just law. We have a diversification portfolio. And one of the other programmes that we're currently delivering is policing degrees. And immersive technology, VR and AR, is absolutely crucial to be able to train students who are going to end up as police officers. They need to be able to get into the scenario. So that use of tech to produce the real world scenarios is really, really crucial to us. We have already developed some of that tech in conjunction with companies that we work with, but it's how we now taking our students' views, how we now develop it further across other programmes. So for law, I can quite easily see how law students can practice their skills in an immersive environment. It provides a safe courtroom setting or a solicitor's office or a barrister's chambers. We can, you know, develop those scenarios quite easily at the moment and start to put our students in them, which means they don't have to come into campus to access our courtroom. They can practice their skills in a virtual courtroom, and that is really the direction of travel, so that students are able to have more flexibility. But turning back to the assessment types, what we have trialled, and this is in our undergraduate law programmes, we've trialled the use of that this year to see how it works with a couple of our modules. The assessment type is a submission of a portfolio. So instead of asking the students to just submit a written portfolio, we've given them an option. We've given them, you can either submit a written portfolio or you can submit that portfolio using an audio file. And that is new. It's a new direction for us, but it's really trying to pick up in the point that not all students want to write a long essay, etc. They want to have different ways in which they can submit their assessments. We've got to be very careful about that, because the module at the end of the day has a set of learning outcomes, and we need to be able to ensure that the assessment has tested properly and thoroughly those learning outcomes. So the assessment type, we might not necessarily be able to offer choice in every single module, but certainly there are things I think that us and HEIs in general can start to look at to allow students a little bit more choice of in their assessments, as well as in the way they learn in the classroom or remotely.
Yeah, thanks, Emma. I think you raised a couple of really, really good points there. I think that choice in assessment type, it doesn't mean to say they're never going to write another essay, but they're going to go from writing every assignment was an essay to having a bit of variety where you really start to measure and reward those different skills. You know, not everybody's good at writing and not everybody's good at oral presentation. So I think that's interesting. And I also like the idea that, you know, you can go into an immersive environment effectively on your own, practice your courtroom skills or practice those things on your own. You know, so for students who are nervous or shy about performing those kind of things in front of others in the first go, you get a bit more confidence. And I know some of those links back to some issues around neurodiversity, which we're also exploring in other work at Advance HE. Thank you both for those really powerful illustrative examples of where we're currently thinking. Sarah, I know JISC have also done a lot of work with students and benchmarking the student experience. What's been the findings from that work?
Well, it's really interesting because I think our findings certainly echo those findings that we've just been hearing about. But over the last year, we've gathered over 38,000 higher education student responses from 41 organisations across the UK through our Digital Experience Insights surveys. And through the student responses, we've really gathered valuable insights into their experiences of the digital environment and how they are learning online. And from what we can sort of draw from that analysis is that students did really appreciate the efforts universities and staff are making to keep learning alive during the pandemic. But I think it's also given us some really interesting pointers there in terms of feeding that into how we design learning and assessment in the future. Students have told us what has helped them to learn and also the barriers that they have faced. And there's some notable benefits for students learning online, which have sort of come to the fore. Those include enabling them to review resources, work at their own pace around other commitments. It facilitates and encourages independent learning. And certainly during the pandemic, they felt safe and it also saved them both time and money. But for a substantial number of students, there were some major barriers to overcome and some challenges to address along the way. And these included access to robust and reliable and affordable Wi-Fi, not having access to a suitable device to work from. Many students, when we followed up with them, were using their mobile phones to access learning, which we know is just not appropriate and effective. Also thinking about where they study. And there were also difficulties in accessing platforms, services and resources that facilitate collaboration, and students not really knowing where to go to get support for learning online. So very clear signposting is something that is always needed, both in the online but also in the physical environment. So for us being able to distill out some of those key messages, we've certainly pulled out some key areas that are important in order to develop an inclusive and flexible learning experience. And we really need to ensure that we're designing learning and assessment specifically for the online environment, as we've just been hearing from Emma and from Steve. We need to ensure that learning platforms are clearly structured and easy to navigate, and we need to prepare students and support students to get the most out of their online learning. And of course, linked into that is ensuring that both students and staff have the digital capabilities and the digital confidence that they need in order to be able to access technology and to fully realise the benefits, but also in terms of developing those skills that they're going to need when they move out into the workplace. And collaboration, of course, is one of those areas that comes through from our survey year on year, where students don't necessarily recognise they've got opportunities to develop those collaborative working skills. In addition, very much a theme that I think is coming through from our work, but also a recent report that was published this week on the Student Futures Manifesto, is it's really important to be working in partnership with students. And it's really essential that we sort of co-create and co-design an effective digital environment for all students.
Thanks, Sarah. you know, clearly for some students, going to uni means moving away from friends, from family, learning to live and learn independently and form new sort of social networks. And they've clearly really missed not just the in-person delivery, but all of the associated on-campus activities, the new clubs, societies and hobbies they can take part in. But then for other students with caring responsibilities, part-time work, those who feel medically vulnerable, there's an appreciation of the opportunity to learn more flexibly. And often those voices are marginalised and we're not hearing those very strongly because they don't have time to come and join the forum and the collaborative groups. And of course, and I think Steve mentioned earlier, we've got to take into consideration the disciplinary differences. Students who need to access laboratories or film studios or theatre spaces, all of those things, to provide the authentic learning experience. This clearly requires working in partnership with students to develop both the vision of online learning and how that happens in practice. Steve, do you want to share what you're doing in Manchester?
Sure. We've run a series of workshops which have had really good engagement from students over the past few months and during the pandemic. But workshops on their own don't get you sort of regular contact with students, you know, that you're dipping into a student body and having a conversation on one particular day. The other thing that we've done is that we've got six student partners that are employed part time to work with us. And we've got one student intern that works with us full time, actually. And that's really powerful because it means that we constantly have access to, in that case, a small number of student voices, but they're able to go out and talk to their peers in a way that we can't. You know, students will talk to other students in a much more open way about things than they would talk to us directly. So that's been a really powerful way of hearing more student voices in a more authentic way that's not filtered through them being worried about what they might say to us or how we might react to it and that kind of thing. We also work really closely with the Students' Union, and they've helped us design all the workshops and choreograph all the activities that we do with students. And it makes an enormous difference. You kind of feel as though you're actually getting to talk to the people who are going to be learning with you, and there are far fewer filters in the way that way around.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting piece of work. I saw a similar piece done, or still being done actually, at Leeds Trinity University, where they've employed, I think, about 20, I think they call them research associates. And they've actually worked in like small groups with an academic to frame a research project, which is exploring all of these issues. And they're going out and collecting the data and having the conversations, which is a fantastic project. Not only does the institution benefit from hearing that really authentic voice, as you said there, Steve, but the students themselves are developing their research skills and really gaining in confidence. I had opportunity to work with those students as part of that, and really was impressive to see the amount of work they've done. So that was fantastic.
I think it's one of those situations where everybody wins.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Emma, if I can turn to you, how are University of Law working with their students?
I have to say, I think what Steve has just described is a really fantastic way of engaging with the student body. And I think it might be an idea that I'm going to take back to the University of Law. Traditionally, I don't think we've been as good. Obviously, like other HEIs, we have sought views in a variety of ways, student views within their course, but we've not taken the students right to the start of the course, other than, of course, we do have groups of trained students that engage in the programme approval and validation process, sit on quality panels and discuss with the academics bringing the programme for approval, you know, how it might work better, etc. So that has been happening for some time. But the way in which the University of Law works, if we are going to design a new programme, we bring a design team together. And traditionally, that design team has consisted of academic members of staff, and also our learning technologists and the folks that run all of our VLE services, etc. So we bring that body of people together, and we have design team meetings, and our design sort of spans from that point. As the university's been diversifying, I've started to write an overarching set of design principles. So it will be an overarching design strategy for the institution. And I have now taken the view of bringing the students into that design process right from the start, and I am embedding the use of students into our design strategy. So the way I would envisage it working is that students will hopefully volunteer from a band that will be trained, but they will volunteer to come in to the various design teams and work with them on the programme development. I think for us, the pandemic has really shifted our view on how we do need to work. As Sarah says, we need to work more in partnership with our students. And this is one of the ways in which we're doing it. I think there's a lot more engagement with the students' union, and our students' union president and elected officers, they come into a lot of the meetings and discussions that we have. But we do need to widen that out to the student population to seek their specific views on how we're designing our programmes for the future.
That's great, Emma. And I think you're on a similar journey to many institutions in terms of that, recognising that need to work with students. And I think the report that Sarah mentioned earlier about the students' future students' manifesto, I think is encompassing some of those ideas there. Just to sort of reel back to some of the thoughts that we had earlier, clearly the pandemic has also accelerated the need for everyone to develop their digital capabilities. And that phrase, which I think was coined by JISC, of living, learning and working in a digital society, is really coming home to roost now, isn't it? I know JISC have a long track record in supporting staff and students to build their digital capabilities. So, Sarah, do you want to reflect on where we are now?
Thank you, Kane. Yes, it's really interesting because going back to our initial insight surveys for our 2022 student survey, we have a question in there that asks students around what support and guidance they receive about the digital skills needed for their course. And this year, only 41% of our HE students agreed that they had received guidance about the digital skills they needed. And only 26% agreed they had an assessment of their digital skills and training needs. So we're still seeing that there is a lot of work that is needed to happen in order to be able to develop the digital capabilities of students. Thinking about our academic staff and our findings from our 2021 DISH Experience Insights Survey of Teaching Staff, which surveyed nearly 4,000 HE teaching staff from 24 universities and a college across the UK. From that report, only 44% of teaching staff agreed that they had received guidance around the digital skills they needed in their teaching role, whilst only 15% agreed they had had an assessment of their digital skills and training needs. So we really do need to ensure that our teaching staff have the digital capabilities that they need to confidently design an effective online experience for their students. And going back to what we were saying earlier around the importance of embedding digital opportunities within the curriculum design, looking at the ways in which technology can support a more effective and more authentic assessment practice, this really is an area that we need to be working closely with universities on. We're working with many universities across the UK on this agenda through our digital capability programme. And within there, we have developed our digital capability framework, which gives a starting point for discussion for staff and students to consider the digital skills that they need in order to be able to effectively learn or effectively work in a digital world. We've developed role profiles that we are just in the process of updating and refreshing in light of the learning through the pandemic. And those relate to roles from academic staff, professional services staff, researchers, to set out what are the minimal capabilities required in order to be able to deliver effectively in those different roles. Staff and students are also self-assessing their digital capabilities using our discovery tool, and from that are receiving sort of a personalised report which identifies their next steps for development, as well as links through to resources that they can help develop their skills further. But one of the areas as well that I think is important to highlight in this agenda, it does relate back to linking it through to professional development and an ongoing recognition of digital practices. And from our teaching staff survey, only 6% of teaching staff agreed that they had received reward and recognition for the digital skills they developed. So it really is vital that universities recognise and reward digital practice, provide ongoing support to staff to further develop their digital capabilities, and also to ensure that we are supporting the sharing of effective practice.
We've been using the JISC Discovery tool at Manchester recently, actually. We've got part of our flexible learning programme is a strand on digital capabilities. And one of my colleagues has been kind of like rolling this tool out first to students, but we're also planning on rolling it out for staff. And it's really good. It does hit the nail on the head in terms of identifying the strengths and weaknesses of what students already know and where they can build on and that kind of stuff. I think the big challenge for us is going to be embedding it in what students do so that it doesn't feel like a sort of a satellite, nice to have, auxiliary kind of thing. That's the bit that we're going to be looking at next. And I think that's the thing that will really make it sort of come alive and be part of what students recognise as an important skill.
Yeah, Steve, I think that's a really important final point there on that, because it's learning with and through the technology that starts to embed it in their everyday practice. It's the old adage, you can be taught about a thing, but until you apply it, it doesn't really become ingrained and embedded. If we just think about the conversation we were having at the start, which was very much built out of our flexible learning framework, which was published way back in 2016, which seems an awful long time ago now. And so the underpinning dimensions of that framework were technology enhanced learning, which I think is almost sounds a bit dated now, doesn't it? Pedagogic approaches, the institutional sort of systems and structures that needed to be in place, and then the employability of our graduates. Colleagues, how do you think policies or practices have advanced in these areas over the intervening years? Are these really still the cornerstones of flexible learning?
I think that they're definitely still the cornerstones. I think one of the things that we've spotted, so to a certain extent, this is an opportunity to not quite reset, because it's not like we're going to be throwing away all the old content and starting completely afresh. But there is an element of thinking about things very differently now compared to what's happened in the past decades. And one of the things that has become really clear is the accessibility inclusivity angle. It's not something, or it's incredibly hard to put it in afterwards. And this is an opportunity to be thinking about it from the beginning, or as close to a beginning as we're going to have for a very long time. So I think that's something that I'd like to see throughout policy generally, is that accessibility has to be something that you think of right at the start, because putting it in at the end is incredibly hard and it doesn't work effectively when you do it that way around.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we're refreshing all of those frameworks, there's a theme that goes across all of them now that sort of, you know, how do you make things accessible and inclusive, you know, for all those opportunities, not just the core curriculum, but extracurricular activities and all of the other opportunities. Emma, any thoughts on those?
Yes, Kay. I think we've talked a lot about technology-enhanced learning and developing new tech that's fit for the 21st century, etc., and fit for the students that we have coming into our institutions now. But I think if I could just focus on what we already have and how we're developing it to sort of meet this flexibility, but without using new tech, but our current virtual learning environment, I think, I mean, as I said before, our VLE is Blackboard. I don't think we were using it in a very innovative way previously. It was a materials repository. It was an assessments repository. There was a little bit of quizzes going on and things like that. And I think there's an awful lot more that we can do with what we've already got at our fingertips. I think some of that, the issue with that is turning back to something Sarah just said, which is the digital capabilities of our staff. And I would say a lot of academics are frightened of using the full functionality of the VLE. So certainly at ULAW, we've embarked on a programme of training, upskilling and helping our staff to really make use of that full functionality of all of the Blackboard tools. So all designers and module leads are now going through that training programme, and hopefully what I'd like to see is if I know all of our staff have been encouraged to undertake the JISC survey, and I'd like to see what they looked like, perhaps if they did that 6 months ago, and what they may look like in 12 months time, because we're really trying to encourage that, which I think will help our students' use of the virtual learning environment and also start to really encourage those conversations around how can I make this a little bit more flexible? How can I change my module in this way? Encourage academics to make more use of conversations with our learning technologists. They're not somebody sitting in a room in campus somewhere that nobody goes to. There needs to be a lot more discussion around how we can do things in the future. I think that will help certainly our student bodies as we go forward. But I just also wanted to touch on one more thing, and I think we've not mentioned that. It is a slight techie thing again, and that's our use of learner analytics. I think that learner analytics for our student bodies, I've seen how amazingly useful they can be. Not just about the engagement of the student, but really looking at how they are performing on the tasks and activities that we're giving them. What that's enabled us to do, we're working very hard to introduce analytics programs at undergraduate and postgraduate level. We're a lot more advanced at postgraduate level than undergrad because obviously we are undertaking SQE programs and the solicitor training programs, and we need to have those analytics available for our students. But what that's enabled us to do is to really, for our academic coach to be able to see how the student is performing in their tasks, and then to be able to support the student and intervene at an early stage, get the student back on track, refer them on to whichever of their subject tutors they need to be referred on to, and really bring them back in, you know, onto the programme early so that they will be successful on their programme. And I think that that is a really key thing that universities do need to start to move forward with. Our students are in many places now, studying in many different ways with many different issues and life experiences. And learner analytics really helps us to just, you know, keep a little bit more notice of the student and support with the student when, you know, if they are not on campus and we're not seeing them, then they may, you know, they may disappear. So that really does help with the more flexible learning approach.
Yeah, thanks, Emma. I think it's important that, again, to be talking to students about how and why you're using learning analytics again, so that, you know, that it's not Big Brother. It's there as a support.
No, it isn't. Yes.
Yeah, I think, as I mentioned, we are reviewing our student success frameworks, and currently, Professor Mark Loon from University of Northumbria, well, he's just completed an integrative review of the research around flexible learning since 2016 in order to update that work. And he'll be expanding on some of these topics in much more detail in a future podcast with colleagues, I think, from Africa, the UK and Australia. So we'll get a real kind of global perspective on some of those changes in practice and technologies that are leveraging flexible learning. And I think he's also hosting a summit at the end of March where, again, colleagues can join a conversation and thinking about what that looks like in their own institution. Just as we sort of draw to a close here today, I suppose I just really want to reflect on the impact, of course, that the pandemic has had on flexible learning. And it's really highlighted for most of us the need to enhance our capacity to deliver flexible and resilient education systems as a whole, not just that kind of in-classroom piece, to meet student expectations and, of course, the accelerating sort of social and economic transformations that we've all sort of touched on and recognised. It's reassuring to see institutions such as the University of Law and the University of Manchester thinking so purposefully about how we can all leverage technology and the teaching and learning approaches required to meet those changing demands. Is there any final comments from colleagues?
Kay, I just wanted to say, just following up from that, I think it has been an amazing 24 months, I think, during the pandemic. The pace of development of learning at HEIs, I'm sure Steve will agree with me, has been a whirlwind pace. It's been at times really hard, but it has allowed us to work at speed to try out new ways of teaching, delivery and assessing. Universities will now be a lot more agile than they perhaps were before, you know, in how they adapt to change. My colleagues, certainly Steve, I'm sure you'll agree, my colleagues have worked 24 hours a day at times, trying to solve issues, prototype new things, etc. They were amazing about it. But I do feel very energized that we do have a good, exciting vision for the future. And I'm pretty sure that that is echoed across the country with our universities.
Yeah, very, very much so. I mean, I couldn't put it better than that, so I'm not going to try.
Thank you, Emma. I was just going to say that that's a great note to end on. Steve, Emma and Sarah, that was a really stimulating discussion. I've really enjoyed hearing your experiences, both the Flexible by Design programme itself and how you've gone on to implement and develop ideas in your institutions since we finished working together last year. And I think, as you know, Emma's really said there, you're great ambassadors for how colleagues across the sector are striving to offer accessible, engaging and interactive learning for all of our students. So thank you all very much.